And so after the interview, the detective said, would you like to have a tour? And then we'll end with that. He said, would you like to have a tour of the precinct? And I said, sure. So he's walking me around, introducing me to various people in the precinct. And we go into the holding cell. And there's a door with a window like this. And there's two young punks looking out. And they see me, and they're pointing and laughing. So he opens the door. And I walk in. And I looked around, and then I looked at these two guys who are, you know, all swaggering and being real tough. And I said, oh, I hear that I'm going to be seeing you at the Big House. I'm a chaplain at the Big House in Monroe. Because I've been doing, before I did this, I was 8 years as a prison chaplain, volunteer prison chaplain in Monroe, Washington. And so I said, oh, I hear I'm going to be seeing you at the state prison soon. And then I went out, and this went all over multiple departments, all over the state of Washington, because immediately these two punks who had been giving lip to the officers and hadn't cooperated in anything from the moment of their arrest were all of a sudden nice and friendly and obedient. Because they're afraid that I know something they don't know. They're going to the big prison in Monroe. And so that got all over. And when these other officers realized that I was the one that had said that, it was like, oh, he's one of us. Let's have a break or some service. All right,
we have a service.
Something that I, before we get into other things, and I can actually open up for questions, but I want to address a subject which I hear a lot from people in confession, and that is about those moments of dryness when you have difficulty praying. Sometimes we go through stressful periods in our lives. Maybe things are going bad at work, or we have family problems and issues, and we feel sort of overwhelmed, and sometimes we feel like our prayers aren't being heard. So what do we do when we have those moments? Well, we Orthodox have the benefit of having icons and lampadas. It's a very wonderful tradition in the domestic church, which is the home church, to keep a lampada burning in front of your main icons. And it's a really good thing to have your family icons displayed in your living room or some central area where it's there all the time and you see it. But also, not just when you're praying, but when you get up in the morning, light the lamp and have it burning. It's that perpetual lamp that reminds you of the presence of God in your midst. But those times when you have difficulty praying, maybe you feel like, well, maybe God is absent, or where is God in all this? Or I hear this a lot from young people that get stressed out because they feel that they're so given over to sins that they feel like God must just be wanting to reject them, turn his back on them. And I always tell them that God is... All right, let me put it this way. If you are a father and you have a child, a young boy, say maybe a toddler, and this two-year-old comes up in front of you and he raises his little clenched fist and he says, Daddy, I hate you. Well, a bad father would grab the kid, slap him on the rear, and send him to his room without dinner. Yeah. A good, loving father grabs him, tickles him, and says, but Daddy loves you, and give him a big hug. And that's generally when the kid starts to squeal with delight. And that's really the way God is with us. God is a loving father. And even when we have failed in our Christian living, maybe sometimes utterly failed, that doesn't mean that God doesn't love us. And in fact, one of the things to keep in mind, the difference, one of the things that we are all burdened with in the West is Calvinism. Calvinism has crept into our society. And in fact, one archbishop told me once that he felt that the reason why so many people throughout the West, including Western Europe, are embracing atheism is because the only God they've ever heard about is the Calvinist God. The Calvinist God is a God, a judicial God. He's a God that it's a basis of I've called you to live a certain life and keep my commandments, and you haven't kept my commandments, and therefore you are anathema. And unless you accept Jesus as your Savior, and see Jesus as having died in your stead because you deserve death. That's not the God of orthodoxy. The God of orthodoxy is a creator God who so loves us that he has reached out to us wanting to complete his creation. And by that I mean he wants to deification, the theosis that takes place, that transforms us and changes us, is the finishing touch of God's creation. Some of the early church fathers actually went so far as to say that if there hadn't been a fall, there still would have been an incarnation, because the way that God designed to complete his creation is to join his divinity to our humanity. And so he condescended to take on our flesh. And that condescension to take on our flesh does not require a fall. So even if the fall hadn't happened, in all likelihood, God would still have condescended to take on our flesh in order to join our humanity with his divinity, which is theosis or deification. And so if we keep that in our mind, that that's what God ultimately wants for us, then we can be more peaceful with our struggle. And there are times when you have so much difficulty praying, and a good way to get through that period is to light your lamp and sit in the chair and just look at the icons and say, God, I'm here. I can't pray. I'm having difficulty with my life, but I'm here. Help, come to me. Anyone can do that. There are times when every one of us has that kind of struggle, that dark night of the soul. And we can do two things. We can either surrender to it and go off and wallow in self-pity and despair, or we can remember that the Old Testament image of God is as speaking to us in the wind. So one of the things that I like to do when I have had I tried to do that a number of months ago during all the forest fires in British Columbia, and I got to the point where I just couldn't take any more visitors to the monastery because we get so many. And oftentimes I will retreat into my cell, which is behind the enclosure, and I'll let the other monks take care of people. But this is the time that I needed something completely different. So I decided that I was going to go over to the Olympic Peninsula to Lake Crescent, which is this place that I usually go in the wintertime, and just to go over there for a day. There's a nice little restaurant, and the resort was built as a roadside, as a roadhouse in 1902, I think. It hasn't changed much. So I'd go there, and I've taken bishops there that have visited us, and it's a very pristine place with a lake that is so deep and clear and beautiful you can see the bottom off the dock. And I decided I'm going to go there. Well, all the way there was smoke from British Columbia. And I kept thinking, well, the further I go, the smoke will lessen up and I'll be fine. By the time I got to Lake Crescent, I couldn't see the other side of this little lake. There was so much smoke. And then I discovered about something about Lake Crescent, that in the summertime, everybody goes to Lake Crescent. So the parking lot that I always thought was overly large was packed. And there were people sitting with their children on the beach in the smoke. And I thought, don't these people read? We're told anyone with compromised immune systems or the elderly or children should stay out of the smoke. Children can get asthma from that. So I drove all the way for that. I didn't even get out of my car. I just left. So then I went to this old hotel in Port Townsend, which is a turn-of-the-century town that at one time was the premier town on the in the Oregon or Washington West Coast, and until Seattle circumvented it or took over with as importance. So this is a town that's kind of stopped in time, and it's a Victorian town with a wonderful downtown and mansions and everything. But there's this huge castle that is now, it was a private home, but it is now a hotel. And I've always seen it, but I've never stayed there. So I thought, well, I'll go stay there. Well, there was smoke there. And the hotel is old. They didn't have air conditioning. So the windows were open. So when I checked into this room to see if I wanted to stay there, the room had smoke in it. And they didn't have a restaurant or a bar. Those had closed 10 years earlier. Mm-hmm. And there was no elevator. It hadn't worked for years. So I've already gone up a huge flight of stairs just to get into the hotel from the parking lot. And I'm walking down to check this room to see if I want to stay there. And the room, the hallway was 1890s. And you walked into the room, and it was 1890s with 1950s grandma just decorations. And I thought, I can't do this. So I left, and I went back to the monastery. All I did is drive in smoke all day long. But when I got back, and there's still smoke there too, and all I needed was just some clean air and some silence. And sometimes as we struggle to find clean air and silence, that's the time that we can just squirrel ourselves away somewhere. Like when I was in college in Berkeley, I lived right on that street right across from the Zellerbach Auditorium.
Bancroft.
I lived on Bancroft above Lucas's bookstore, which is now a music shop or something. And then in the front apartment. And, oh my gosh, there was a pizza parlor next door. So at night, people were going in and out, and one day somebody tied up their dog right down below my window, and the dog barked the whole time they were in the pizza parlor, and I finally lost it. And I went down and I untied the dog and let him go in the pizza parlor. And I followed him to the owners. And I said, please, I'm trying to study. I can't with your dog barking below my window. And there was another time when there were a whole bunch of dogs came up the stairs into the apartment building after a dog that was in heat. And I went into heat. And I took a stick and I chased all the dogs down the stairs, and I was like a crazy man running up Bancroft chasing these dogs at 2 a.m. People were parting the way. You know, oh, there's one of those crazy Berkeley people. But we all have moments like that. And the moments like that are when we just need to be alone with God. And God doesn't require us to be wordy. Now, the wonderful thing about the prayer books that we have is that those are prayers that were composed by saints, or they're from Scripture. So those are aids to teach us how to pray. But sometimes, even those can be wordy. Because what do we really need at times like that? What we really need is to just listen to God. I visited a friend in Portland that I had gone to college with who's having major health problems. And his sons cheated him out of most of his life savings and for drugs, and they're gone, and he has no one. So I went to take Paul on a drive and just to get him out of his house. And Paul was in such dire straits that I could hardly stop, or I could hardly get in a word edgewise. It was just boom, 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 you know, talk, 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 which he needed to do. But sometimes we're like that with God. And our prayer becomes, gimme, gimme, gimme. This is what I need, God. And then when God doesn't give it to us, we think, well, where is God? Maybe God doesn't exist.